We have another installment of the Brave Space series, which is the platform for honesty and presence, where we invite diverse perspectives on how the university and our society can do the work of becoming a truly welcoming environment, not just on paper, but in practice. This week, I brought together a couple different people. Dr. Shardae M. Davis, who is an assistant professor in the communications department and affiliated faculty with the Africana Studies Institute and INCHIP and some other institutes and centers. One of three faculty coordinators of the new anti-Black racism course that was offered starting this fall semester to all students, faculty, and staff at UConn. And we also talked with Mason Holland, who's a sophomore honors student. He's a political science major with a minor in women's, gender, and sexuality studies, president of UConn's chapter of the NAACP, community service chair for Brothers Reaching Our Society, public education outreach chair for UConn Collaborative Organizing, and a second-year member and FYE mentor for the Scholars House Learning Community. And we started off by discussing the origins of the anti-Black racism course, which came about when student Gamira Manigat and alumni Wajinku Gotero, at a panel hosted by the African American Cultural Center, asked why the university was able to designate resources to quickly create a university-wide COVID-19 course, but had not done the same for the pressing issue of anti-Black racism. And at that panel, President Katsalaeus promised to make it happen.
Being a constituent, another member of this community, it was important for me to make sure that I was at that town hall that was hosted by the African American Cultural Center, and was really proud, actually, at the way in which the students felt empowered and emboldened to push back a little to the president and to be able to kind of ask that question about how is the university addressing this other longstanding, over 400-year pandemic of anti-Black racism, and rightfully so. I think that was a really poignant response to him. It was really great to see that the president responded the way that he did and didn't try to come up with some justification why a COVID course is more important, perhaps, or why we don't need an anti-Black racism course, but addressed the students' needs. He then entrusted that responsibility to the provost, Carl Lejeune, and the provost asked myself and Dr. David Embrick and Dr. Milagros Castillo Montoya to make it happen. It's important to note in terms of how this came about in timeline, because I believe that that town hall was in June. The provost asked us in the second week of July, and the course opened the second week of fall term. It's 9 modules. It involves myself and 2 other faculty of color coordinators. It involves an advisory board with prominent Black leaders across our campus. It involves 11 or 12 or more Black faculty across UConn who contributed to this course. It involves the president responding, the provost. It involves a lot of individuals. So for that to happen in a month and some change, I have to give us a pat on the back for what we were able to do. What was your take on hearing that this course was going to happen?
Quite honestly, I hope that UConn's intentional in it. And I think that from the time that I got here as a freshman, I'm a sophomore now, I was very wary about UConn's commitment to actually addressing these things and not just addressing it as, you know, racism exists and slavery happened and Jim Crow, but really doing a deep dive into what is anti-Black racism and how does racism not only exist, but perforate throughout the institutions of this country and the institutions that govern this university. We're trying to pass legislation to make that a mandatory course. I wanted certain topics to be addressed. I wanted to be as intersectional as possible. And I want us to talk about every single facet of what anti-Black racism is in America, what it looks like, and how we change that. And I think that the inroads that this course has made, actually breaking apart that culture that we have here and that we have just generally in the state and in the country. And now the onus is upon us to understand and to make the impact widespread, to actually talk about these things. And we're actually having those conversations as uncomfortable as they may be. Just from the student perspective, us as Black folk are not a very large percentage here at the University of Connecticut, under 8%. And having a university commitment to actually addressing this in depth, it made me feel more comfortable and it made me feel safer. It made me proud to be at the University of Connecticut, quite frankly.
I am someone who always thought, as many of us are saying this year, that I was not racist. And obviously my eyes are being opened this, especially this year with everything that's happened in the national conversation, to things that I did not know existed and that I was kind of blind to. It was just really amazing to have these things talked about in such a frank way.
It's really cool to hear your perspectives and you all highlight things about this course that were the outcome of many, many conversations that we had as we were developing this course. I'm thankful that the provost gave us ample resources for us to make sure that we were creating a course that was unapologetically Black, because there were some things that we were not going to budge on that were not up for negotiation. We were going to center Black voices. We were going to center Black research, because so many of us are doing work that gets marginalized, and making sure that folks know that the contributing faculty are experts on this topic.
Another thing that you've been working on, Dr. Davis, is this hashtag Black in the Ivory. You and Joy Melody Woods started this viral hashtag amid the protests after the deaths of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. And you and many, many others shared your experiences as, you say, Black academics is the word you use a lot. People in a predominantly white academia. So I was wondering if both of you could talk a little bit about some of your experiences from that perspective of just being academics in these white spaces, especially at UConn.
Being at predominantly white institutions my entire career as an undergraduate student, as an undergraduate researcher, as a graduate student, and now a faculty person. I think the one thing that I'll say initially is just thinking about my experiences as death by a thousand paper cuts. I think because I have learned so early on, being in predominantly white pre-K through 12 educational spaces, how to maneuver very strategically as the only one, I have not been the target of very overt racist acts. But absolutely, research shows that racial microaggressions, the effects of them are just as significant as the effects of overt racism. It's been incessant. The psychological harm that it's exacted on me is significant because of the constant second guessing that I have to do. Did that professor go and ignore my comment, but then when the white person said the exact same thing and applauded them for saying it, was that because he just didn't hear me? Did I not word it correctly? Was I not clear? It's a constant internal discussion and assessing that I have to do, and so many other Black folks have to do. It's straining. And in fact, it can affect my workload, right? The way I show up in classes, the way I perform in exams, the way I'm able to do my research or to serve on committees and interact with my colleagues. It absolutely has an effect. I had no idea that when I thought of this hashtag Black in the Ivory and had this decision to want to go and to use it on Twitter just to share my own experiences, that it was going to engender this kind of a response. And I'm still to this day blown away with the global response and the conversation that's now happening that wasn't really happening before.
To your point, Dr. Davis, I think when you talk about the maneuverability within this structure, I definitely feel survivor's guilt. And I feel it because specifically, I can't even count on my hands how many individuals look like me, come from the place that I come from, that were probably smarter than me, were more articulate than me, that don't have the opportunities that I have. So I think there's a burden in knowing that you're one of the few here. You feel a burden to be as good as you can be so that that door can open wider. And it is difficult. At the same time, I can say that being in the Ivory Tower offers you a unique ability to look at things in a very specific way and be able to be surrounded by brilliant minds that enable you to draw out different conclusions and different perspectives about certain topics that you interact with. It's always a learning experience. It's one of the most gratifying things to be in a place like this. It's a mix of being grateful, but also guilty. And I feel like we always have to have that on our minds and our spirits.
Mason, you struck me earlier when you mentioned not feeling safe. And you talked about how having the commitment to offer this course made you feel safer as a member of the university community. What kinds of things do we need to do as an institution?
I think safety is in terms of belonging and feeling that I'm not always being persecuted. I'm not always being targeted for just existing in this space. But also physically, you know, existing as a Black man, and for Dr. Davis, as a Black woman in this country, in this state, at this university. The course makes me feel safer in terms of, you know, I feel seen in academia. I feel like our issues are actually being talked about in an intentional way. But I think more broadly, the culture at UConn isn't safe for Black folk. I think in the way that professors interact with students a lot of the times, the way students interact with students, a lot of us don't feel the desire to be in class and participate and feel comfortable just in that. And I think that's kind of the double consciousness that comes in when you're in a classroom that you feel outside of, but that you want so desperately to be a part of. Secondly, I think in terms of what's been going on just in relation to the country, I'm also involved in the efforts to defund UCPD. And there's certain issues that I feel like exist on campus related to whether it's substance abuse or whether it's related to sexual assault or mental health, that those are the things that we need to be focused on. They don't need to be policed because we don't address what's actually going on. We need to actually direct capital away from the police department and actually bring it into public safety more broadly to be able to address issues in a more, you know, actually touch the root rather than the branches. And I also feel like the culture, it's difficult because I can't just point to one thing and be like, if this changes, everything's fine, because that's not the truth. It takes a comprehensive and collective effort. How do we inspire people to not just change for while they're in college, but also carry these lessons on and these messages and these experiences throughout the rest of their lives? The work starts now. Progress isn't linear. Progress is very jagged. There's a lot of kinks in it, but all the work that we do, this podcast, the course, the conversations that we have, our existence is progress. And progress makes me feel safer.
Some of these changes, it can't be symbolic. It can't be checking a box anymore. I think we have to really embrace this idea of equity and not equality. And when it comes to equity, there are race-based and gender-based gaps where there are resources that need to be dedicated to Black folks specifically. That's Black students, that's Black staff, that's Black faculty, Black administrators. That is going to require kind of walking boldly and making really bold decisions relative to perhaps other universities, comparable universities across the United States, but in taking a stance and saying we recognize that racism shows up and manifests differently and uniquely for Black folks within the institution, and thus we have to respond in kind in a very unique and targeted and personalized way. There are some things that we can do rather quickly and easily now so we can start to see some change being enacted, but we also can't get really complacent in the add and stir recipe, like the quick fixes. There, in order to make lasting change, that means it's going to require structural change. And structural change takes a lot of time. Some of those changes we're not going to see until well after many of us are gone. But we're going and we're planting those seeds and we're making those initial steps now, knowing that in due time that there'll be a harvest that will be yielded.
That was great, Julie. Thank you so much. I think that whole course is a really good example of how quickly the university can respond when there's demand from students about sort of a major topic they want to see explored in the classroom.
Absolutely. And I hope that, you know, as we talked about a little bit, that becomes something that is offered going forward. And as Dr. Davis and Mason said, there's a lot more that can be done and hopefully will be done too.